Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: Visit Springfield, PI.org, and the Illinois Education Association.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, we are at the end of the legislative session. Lawmakers are wrapping up their work, but as usual, a lot of key issues remain to be worked out. We'll discuss where it all stands, that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, Patrick Fingston. He's author of the Illinois Political Newsletter and a radio host at WMAY in Springfield. Patrick usually joins us remotely, but today he's in studio, and thanks for being here with us. Good to see you.
Nice to be in your public radio digs. I like it.
Good to see your face today.
Patrick, nobody ever says that.
Patrick, let me start by mentioning that we are recording on Friday morning, so the legislature is scheduled to wrap up over the weekend by Sunday night. One of the things that they need to get done is to pass a budget. There seems to be a lot of talk still going behind the scenes on this. Where do things stand that you've heard?
Well, it's as we're talking Friday morning, it seems like they're in a better position than they were, say, Wednesday afternoon, when talks between the governor and the two legislative leaders, Chris Welch, the speaker, and Senate President Don Harmon, the word that was used for me, or the phrase, was went off the rails. There were huge fights over where cuts may come from, what the revenue number is going to look like. The whole thing stalled when Democrats asked for $89 million that they gave to the governor in a bridge fund last year that was to be used to fill any holes from federal cuts. There was $100 million in that last year. He used $11 million of it during the fiscal year. Legislature basically said, we'd like that back into the general revenue fund. Pritzker said no. Entire thing went off the rails on Wednesday. I'm told Thursday things were a lot better. By Friday morning, I was hearing that we're going to see a revenue number soon, which will give us the indication of what they're going to do in terms of tax increases and what money they think they're going to spend. As always, the plane lands late, but it'll probably land. There's just going to be quite a few headaches between now and Sunday night.
Yeah, you know, we have been hearing for the entire, beyond the entire fiscal year, even before it started last year, of whether or not the federal government was going to provide the money that it had already been appropriated to the state, that weren't sure what the economy was going to do. This is a tough budget to put together because of a lot of uncertainty that's out there. And that's not uncommon either. But I mean, at the same time, this seems a little more cloudy than normal.
You're flying the 747 somewhere over Tulsa while you're trying to build the plane at the same time. This is a really difficult budget. One, because the revenue projections were already bad. Right. Sales tax, income tax revenue was expected to be not great. Sales tax is probably better now that gas prices have gone through the roof. And then you see the economy just sort of teetering on a knife's edge that could have a huge impact here, not to mention the ongoing threats from the Trump administration, because they're openly attacking blue states. You know, and I've heard that if Trump were to go after state government, you know, and pull grants, and after court battles, a lot of those things would probably be more of an issue in the out years, but it's obviously still a concern. There were talks as late as last month that they would maybe just even appropriate maybe a half year budget and come back and see where they were at in January. So that ship seemingly sailed, but there will be a lot of talk about do they need to fix it when they come back, either at veto or next winter.
Yeah, Charlie, you've covered budgets for decades in the state and watched it, and sometimes the hard decisions don't get made here. They get made later on. You expect that's what's going to happen?
I'm guessing there will be a budget passed. I'm thinking some of the hard decisions really can't get kicked down the road. One of the things that's already out there that the education community is unhappy about is the unions are arguing that the state is not fully committing to the evidence-based funding formula, which requires increases for poorly funded school districts. They're arguing that, oh, that's like $1 billion short that should be in there. They're making that argument. Some of the human services providers are concerned because there's no increase in their allocations at the same time that inflation is driving their costs up. So those are the kind of things. And there is this concern, what's coming down the road from the Trump administration. We know that Donald Trump is a very vindictive individual. He's not particularly concerned by the normal guardrails. And so he'll try and figure out, particularly if Pritzker does run for president and starts to show some, what would you say, some viability, Trump will try and hurt Illinois however he can. So that those are the considerations that make this a different budget year. We've had tough budget years in the past where we've had to cut back, but there was always more certainty about what was happening at the federal level. Now this is the whole calculus is like reversed, where suddenly you can't really count on the federal government anymore.
Well, Patrick Pritzker has certainly got under Donald Trump's skin at times, but there seems to be some back and forth going with some Democrats at the Capitol. You wrote about that in your newsletter.
Yeah, there's, and to a point, there's always this little bit of infighting at the end of a session, as you guys well know, having been around more of them than me after the years that I've been around, that, you know, everybody gets mad at everybody. At the end of a session, but there are Democrats that are certainly frustrated with the governor right now. There are some that feel like they can't trust him. There are some that say that he says one thing in public and one thing in private, that he's not been good faith, that he's more focused on running for president than he is being governor. And some of those frustrations are starting to simmer up to the surface, and that trust issue could impact some major legislation that one would argue they have to get done by the end of the weekend.
We'll talk about some of that coming up here on State Week.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
We're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, and Patrick Fingston has joined us this week from the Illinois Political Newsletter and WMAY Radio. Patrick, I'll go right back to you. You mentioned some of the issues. I guess one of those that certainly got a ton of attention is the Chicago Bears' push for a new stadium. There's talk about a site in Arlington Heights. There's talk about a site in Hammond, Indiana. They want to move from Soldier Field, but they want help from the state. Are they going to get it?
Well, we call it the mega projects, Bill, over on my show, in lowly commercial radio. It's the tax, what are they calling it, tax certainty that the Bears want for this Arlington Heights site. Because estimates show that if the Bears build this site, and there's no state money that would go to building the stadium, right? The Bears have said for literal years now, we'll put up the money for our own stadium. We just need help with infrastructure. We need help with property taxes. There are estimates that a property tax bill on a new stadium in Arlington Heights in Cook County with those wacky property tax numbers up there would cost the team somewhere between $180 and $210 million a year. That's the difference in profitability and not in some cases. The stadium in the NFL that pays the highest property tax rate is SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. Remember, $180 to $210 million for a New Arlington Heights stadium. SoFi Stadium's tax bill, $8 million. We're not talking about a couple of bucks here and there. Hundreds of millions of dollars difference between the two. Current Soldier Field has no tax, property tax rate, whatever, Charlie, what do they call it? Guaranteed rate field, whatever. Sox Park is zero because it's state-owned. The Cubs pay a low property tax rate. United Center is a low property tax rate. The Bears say, why should we be expected to pay $180 or $210 million a year in property taxes, allow us to negotiate a rate with the school districts, with the city, with the park district, et cetera, in Arlington Heights that helps us make this viable. I think most people look at that and say that's not an unreasonable ask, but it's also coming at a time when the legislature is doing diddly squat about, is that okay for public radio? Diddly squat about addressing property taxes for homeowners. And even Senate President Harmon told us a couple of weeks ago that I have a really hard time passing a bill that gives a $10 billion sports franchise property tax certainty. And the people in his district that live in bungalows don't get property tax certainty. That's been the real push in the Senate is, can you do real property tax relief for homeowners along with a Bears bill? And they are so hugely complicated issues. We're talking literal billions of dollars in tax shifts from school property taxes to the general revenue fund. If you're going to make meaningful reductions in property taxes, you can't do that in 72 hours in Springfield.
Now, Charlie, is that fair in some ways? I mean, this is one project. I mean, we're talking about the property tax system in the state. That's a big problem in the state, and it's been hard to get a handle on for this to get wrapped up with the Bears. I mean, it seems to me like maybe that's not quite fair in some ways to put it all on them. But what's your thoughts on this, Charlie?
Well, I think the difficulty is, as Patrick suggested, just the overall economic times. If you're a homeowner, as I am, and you go out to fill up your car with gasoline, and you had, I think I had like half a tank to put into my van, and it was like 50-some dollars. And I'm thinking, whoa. And so you see the groceries are up, and you see your cost of living going up, and then you realize your property taxes are also going up. And now here's this multi-billion dollar private corporation that wants to come in and cut a deal with the local taxing bodies where they will pay a fraction of what they would pay otherwise. And who's going to pick up the difference? Now, the House passed bill provided a modicum of property tax relief, but when it was analyzed, it turned out that you would save maybe a buck and a half on your property taxes. So the question is, if you're a school district and you're having to reduce the property taxes and commit for a long period of time, 40 years, that this is all we're going to ask from this major landowner, how do you cover the expenses that are going to continue to grow unless the state does something dramatic to reverse the fact that we rely, in my judgment, way too heavily on property taxes to fund K-12 education? Your local property owners in your school district are going to be faced with some tough choices. And there was a very uncomplimentary analysis put out by the Cook County Treasurer's Office that basically said that the notion that these tax incentives, the way they work, they undercut one of the big advantages of some big development in that they reduce the property taxes. And so expanding the property tax base provides relief to other taxpayers. But if you don't expand it, then the other taxpayers are on the hook.
Yeah, I have a couple of issues with that, Charlie, if you don't mind my interjecting. Is this isn't going to lead to some influx of kids into Arlington Heights District 214, right? It's a stadium and it's a commercial development. I mean, think of the ballpark village around St. Louis. I think there might be a little bit of like apartment housing and that sort of thing, but it's not like they're bringing in 5,000 new kids into Arlington Heights schools that they somehow have to find room for. This is a football stadium, and the tax break would only be on the stadium itself. All the other commercial development would still be charged as a normal commercial property at least what the House passed in that bill. So we're talking about stadium only here. And so it's still a net positive for the school district, because say you cut that property tax bill from $180 million to $18 million a year. That's still $18 million, say to the school district, I'm sure, because that's that's the bulk of the property tax bill, right? That's $18 million that is I don't want to say free money, but new money for the school district, right? That's a significant chunk of change. That makes their life easier. And I would argue that eventually helps them lower property tax rates because it increases their EAV. So it will theoretically bring property taxes down. It's just, we've gotten into so much of a mess. This House bill was such a Christmas tree with everything. Christmas tree is a state house lingo for folks that don't know this of stacking the tree with all the tinsel and garland and ornaments and stuff until it's so heavy that it falls over on itself. And it almost fell over on itself in the House. I think what you're going to see, if the Senate even moves this, and there was concern among Senate Democrats that I talked to Thursday night, that Senate President Harmon was just going to kick this thing down the road, that he was going to say, we're not going to do this. We're going to let the chips fall there where they may. If the Bears want to move to Indiana and build their stadium on a bed of steel slag and biomass, you can Google that yourself, then good luck to you, right? We may be coming to a point where we need to be talking about, are they calling the Bears bluff to leave? That may be the real story here.
Also, real quick, did want to ask about another controversial piece of legislation. Patrick, you got your ear to the ground on this. The Build Act, as the governor has promoted, this would be to create more affordable housing, but a lot of locals are not on board with this because it would preempt zoning in a lot of these cases. So a lot of people are like, we would have no say on what's being built in our community. So what's likely to happen here?
Yeah, so that's been the real crux of this bill, is the governor wants a statewide zoning standard so that you can build like your mother-in-law flats in Harrisburg, I guess, right? Like, I mean, what works in Uptown and Lincoln Park isn't going to work the same in Libertyville, isn't going to work the same in Springfield, isn't going to work where I grew up in Iroquois County, isn't going to work where you grew up in the South, Sean. So it's, you know, that's where mayors have been saying, this is why we need local control. I think they've killed a majority of the bill. I think a couple of things are going to move through the Senate on Friday. We'll see. Maybe enough for the governor to claim victory and make it a national campaign issue. But it's certainly not going to be to the extent that we thought it may have been earlier in the year.
And Charlie, he certainly ran up against a buzzsaw here against the Illinois Municipal League, other local governments. They like to keep that local control.
Oh, yeah, and that was the issue from day one. I'm thinking to myself, when the governor proposes this, basically the state would control zoning, residential zoning. I'm thinking to myself, the Municipal League's not going to like that. And the Municipal League generally is able to stop stuff that they really don't like. And so to the extent that there are incentives involved in the governor's plan, local governments are fine with those, but they don't want to be required to do anything. And the more upscale communities where you have a huge lot, I don't know what, an acre mansion, so to speak. I don't know if that's a mansion or not. But in any way, you live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of room between the houses, and now suddenly we're going to have a requirement that on part of my acreage, we're going to have a duplex, or we're going to have a four flat. You know, that just doesn't ring well or sound well for the local governments.
You're listening to State Week, back with more in a moment.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.
This is State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler and Patrick Fingston. Well, we've talked about some things that may or may not happen here in the final hours of the spring legislative session, but there have been some bigger accomplishments this week, I guess you could say, and one of those had to do with AI. And to be honest with you, as I read through this, I was getting lost of what this actually would do, Patrick.
I think you and I may be in the same boat here a little bit, Sean. That I think it's a little bit vague in terms of like safety warnings and reporting and certain algorithmic requirements that all go way above this farm boy's head. I think what it's doing is creating some standards that Peter Thiel's going to understand more than I will. The bill is similar to what has already been enacted in California and is about to be enacted in New York. And I think that awaiting federal action, listen, I don't know that what sort of safety reporting you're doing on ChatGPT is you're making AI slop images to put on social media, like some Republican candidates for governor may be doing. I don't know how that impacts real life. Maybe it's the chatbot thing, but I don't know that it's going to really get into our everyday lives at this point. It's certainly something I think we all need to get a better grasp of.
And also, Charlie, legislation passing this week, a couple of pieces of legislation that would deal with both automobile and homeowners insurance rate hikes. Of course, this became a really big issue, has been an issue for a number of years, but really cropped up last year when State Farm raised rates about 27%. This now would give, the basic thing here would give the State Department of Insurance authority to regulate premiums and would also require any big spikes in premiums to also get some advance notice. So this, you think this is a good consumer piece of legislation?
Yeah, yes, I do. Part of the difficulty, what happened was that the homeowners insurance rates went through the ceiling and Governor Pritzker and others were very concerned. And they did not get straight answers from the insurers about why the rates jumped. The kind of the, what would you say, the notion that the governor and others had was these insurance companies sustained losses elsewhere on the East Coast and the West Coast, the fires in California, and those losses got factored into the rates they were charging Illinois homeowners or property owners. Now the insurance company said, oh no, we don't do that. But they did not provide the documentation that Pritzker found satisfying. So under this new legislation, the insurance companies have to let policy holders know about any rate increase of 10% or more. And it would give the state's Department of Insurance authority to review and block what the department considered to be unfair hikes. And if the Department of Insurance find these new rates unreasonable, insurers must refund customers the difference. And so there was one bill was for homeowners, another bill was for automobiles, and it followed the same general pattern in that the rates would be reviewed.
Governor is likely to sign those pieces of legislation. We'll see when, and we'll talk more about it then. Patrick, did want to mention as well, Darren Bailey, the Republican nominee for governor. Of course, J.B. Pritzker is running, but also a former Republican strategist, Colin Corbett, has decided to file as an independent. So tell us about him really quickly, and does he have a chance to be either a spoiler or really make some noise in this race?
Full disclosure, friend of mine, not involved, you know, in the campaign, treat him like everybody else. He has made it clear that he was leaving the Republican Party because it was not responsive to how many suburbanites feel, that it had become too extreme. Democrats are too extreme in his mind. And that as we've seen polling that shows 45% of the electorate considers itself independent, that there's a lane for something new. Republicans are losing their you-know-what over this, essentially claiming that J.B. Pritzker is buying a spoiler candidate, which is great, or which is really interesting considering Pritzker spent $30 million on TV ads in 2022 that helped Darren Bailey win the Republican nomination. So who has Pritzker really helped over the years? I think that their polling is showing that he'll poll from both Republicans and Democrats. You've seen in a week, he's already putting together a better campaign than the Bailey campaign is. Well, he confirmed this the other day that they have pledges of well over $1 million in fundraising, which is significantly more than the Bailey campaign raised in the first quarter of the year. There are two groups. There are the people that believe a third party, an independent, is never going to be a real player. You know, Rich Whitney got 10% in 2006 when everybody knew Rod Blagojevich was corrupt. And then there are others that think this may be the death knell of the Republican Party in this state, and he could make the GOP finish third. And that, boy, would that be embarrassing.
Well, time now for our notes from the field, and Patrick will stay with you.
Well, there's a new poll from Emerson College, and it has both good news and bad news for Governor J.B. Pritzker's national ambitions. The poll of the potential 2028 Democratic presidential field showed former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg leading the field with 18% of the vote. Governor Pritzker is pretty far down the list with 4.4% of those responding. That seems low, but it's almost double the 2.7% that he tallied in February. He still finds himself trailing some national figures, though, like former Vice President Kamala Harris, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York, and others. So with his reelection essentially seen as a shoo-in in this state, is Pritzker more or less motivated to run for president based on these numbers? I think we all know what he's planning.
All right. And Charlie.
Yeah, I have to comment on that. It occurs to me, oh, not so many years ago, there was this kind of funny looking state lawmaker who had a weird name, and he was talking about running. Everybody discounted him. And then lo and behold, Barack Obama winds up being elected president. So this far out, you really don't know. One of the things that I wanted to mention is that on Wednesday, there was a joint session of the state legislature. The House and Senate met together in the House chamber. That happens very rarely. Usually it happens for the state address, a budget address. And this one was to honor retiring U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. And basically the folks who were there and spoke recalled the highlights of his 44 years of public service. Durbin, what I found interesting, issued a warning about this fall's midterm elections. And this is a quote from him. "Today, we meet 5 months before a national election. Debates in Congress and contests in our courts indicate this next election may be challenged in ways we have never seen before in our history," Durbin said. And this is he's talking to the joint session. Abraham Lincoln, in the House Divided speech that he gave here in Springfield, gave a grim warning that the divisions in America over the issue of slavery could destroy our nation. The challenges we face in the days ahead could be just as serious. I hope that those of us blessed to live in this land of Lincoln will remember his warnings in 1858 and his counsel to those who lead this nation in our time. So I thought that was a pretty sober warning from the retiring senator.
We're out of time for our State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Patrick Fingston, radio host for WMAY in Springfield and author of the Illinois Political Newsletter. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.